Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where have the Lakers just been resting on their laurels this summer? Or have they been resting on their Lauri Markkanens? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but the Lauri Markkanen saga in Utah is finally over, and it hasn't really done anything to the NBA trade landscape. So run it back, Nation, here we come. Speaking of running it back, it looks like Team USA and Team France are both about to run it back for the gold medal game in the Olympics, because Team USA came back from down 17 points to Serbia to eke out a win and beat Nikola Jokic. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, were you able to catch highlights of Team USA's epic win against Serbia? Because Team USA was down by 11 points heading into the fourth quarter. Euro Connect, as I like to call him, Bogdan Bogdanovic, was absolutely killing Team USA. But LeBron James, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, and KD led the charge down the stretch, and they somehow pulled it out. And it was probably one of the most exciting pure basketball games that I've seen in a second. But yeah, were you able to catch any of the game or any highlights?
Yeah, I was able to catch most of the game. I missed some significant chunks that I will catch up on later, watch a replay of. But it was fun because basically, like, we got Team USA to play the way that all these other teams play, which was, like, invested in actually winning a game. It feels like Team USA, like, winning for this group became so easy, or looked so easy after the first few games. It's like, they didn't want to just win. They wanted to win with style, right? I mean, Steph Curry had 36 points in this game, so this is no way intended to be like a dig at him, but it's just amusing that, you know, we're in the game that decides who's going to go to the gold medal game, and Steph Curry is doing his, like, turn around before the three goes in the court, you know, like, his theatrics, like, we're up 31 points, but it was, like, in the first quarter, you know, so that kind of gave you a look into their, you know, sort of mental state. But they were able to, you know, obviously they dug themselves a huge hole and they were able to get there. And Serbia was executing really well. So to watch the way that they turned it around, it was super exciting to see.
And LeBron James had a triple-double. Him and Steph were absolutely embracing each other very tightly at the end there for good reason. Yeah, it's insane. And I'm glad that LeBron James, by the way, is showing like the gray in his beard a little bit, Captain Graybeard there. But LeBron had this one play towards the end where he grabbed the rebound and took it the full length of the court for a reverse layup. And I think that put the Team USA up by three. And from there, they never looked back. But it's so insane to watch a near 40-year-old LeBron still orchestrating the entire group out there and being sort of like this steady, calming presence, which makes sense. But yeah, I think just seeing the togetherness amongst Team USA, having looked frazzled for the first three quarters of that game, I mentioned it on Twitter, but I hated how much it felt like we were the Lakers versus the Denver Nuggets for more reasons than one, because obviously we have LeBron James and Anthony Davis on one side and then Nikola Jokic on the other side doing whatever he wanted. But instead of having Jamal Murray, he had Bogdan Bogdanovich on his side. But to that same end, Team USA kind of flipped the script on Nikola Jokic, because I think Team Serbia was up for like 80%, 85% of the game, much in the same way the Lakers were up on the Denver Nuggets in last year's first round series for like 75% of every game. But Team USA flipped the script. The Lakers flipped the script, if you want to call it that, and they eked out the win. So yeah, amazing win by Team USA. Hope they can pull it off against France again, back to back for the gold medal. But today, in today's episode, we are going to talk about how we think this run it back version of the Lakers are going to do this upcoming season, with the front office having made no real moves. And then for the second part of this episode, we're going to talk about what trades we would do that are worth giving up rotation players for, and the 2029 first round pick or the 2031st first round pick for. So let's talk about the run it back Lakers, Tommy. How good can the 2024-25 run it back group be? This will be the third season that this main core will be together, even though it's only really been a season and a half. But for the Lakers, a season and a half, 2 years may as well be a half decade, the way that they have turned their rosters over the last couple of years. So before you answer on how you think they're going to do, I think we need to reframe this question a bit to, how do we think the Lakers will start the season off, and where will they be by mid-season? I think we need to split the season in two between pre- and post-deadline, because the finish line for me is not April or June yet. It's really the end of December and just making sure we're a competitive team. Because by mid-season, teams will have a better idea of where they stand, including the Lakers, and the teams who are bowing out of the playoff race will be looking to plan for the summer already. Maybe unrealistic asking prices will have gone down, and the Lakers should be more primed to make deals that can actually upgrade their roster, provided they're competitive by that point. So for the people acting like, oh my God, we're going to run it back and just be a ninth seed again, I really don't get that sentiment at all. That really only applies if you truly believe the Lakers are not going to make any move at all this entire year. Never mind the fact that the Lakers weren't even a ninth seed last season or the season prior. There are clear contextual reasons as to why the Lakers had a worse record than they should have both seasons. The over-under that Vegas put out for the Lakers earlier in the summer was 44.5. Last year, the Lakers won 47 games. After Rui Hachimura got inserted into the starting lineup, the Lakers went on a 22-10 run to close the season. That is a 56-win pace. So yeah, I'll turn it now to you. How do you think the Lakers, as currently constructed, which they look pretty much exactly the same as last year, except they lost Torian Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie and gained Bronny James and Dalton Connect, how do you think they're going to fare next season?
I would say, based on, and this is not even necessarily based on the fact that we're running back the same roster, because even that, there's context around it that changes things. But, talent-wise, there's two factors, talent-wise and then looking at like what the other teams in the West have done, right? I think this team is roughly, I'm not just saying this because we have the same amount of talent. I just, some teams in the West went up, some teams went down. We stayed roughly the same. I think this team is roughly a 45 to 50 win team like we projected last year. In the course of an 82 game season, like It's crazy. I realize the 5-game range is maybe not satisfying for some people, but in the course of an 82-game season, things can flip, like kind of swing, right? Like we finished, what, 40? Remind me how many wins we had last year? 47.
47.
47 wins last year. You know, a few games go this way, a few games go that way. We could have had 45, we could have had 50. And obviously those individual games make huge seeding differences, but I think that's roughly the range we're operating in. I don't think we're a number one or two seed. I guess framed another way, I don't think we're a number one or two seed in the conference. And we could really fall anywhere between 3 and 9 or 10. You know what I mean? Like depending on where the other teams kind of stack up.
Now, do you agree with me that we should kind of be looking at this season in two parts? And first, just focusing on how we're going to do in the first half of the season, because as far as I'm concerned, I think this team will need to make a trade eventually if they have higher ceiling hopes in the playoffs, which again, the Lakers always do. They always are trying to win the championship. So they're going to need to make a trade eventually. But for me, I'm kind of like compartmentalizing the season. So if this group stays exactly the same, you could probably project them out to be a 45 to 47 win team through the course of an entire 82 game regular season. But let's say, Tommy, the focus is just let's make it to the end of December. How do you think this team will fare? And do you think they can quote unquote tread water?
Oh, I think they can definitely tread water. I think, you know, the question is by the time we get to the deadline, is there a move to take the next step, right? Because it's like the only thing that's going to elevate this team to a top two, you know, kind of team in the West is going to be if one of our current role players becomes like a, either all of them have to get significantly better, like incrementally better, and the collective whole is like we added a new, you know, borderline star player, or like Austin, Rui, D'Lo. Most likely out of this list is going to be Austin, but like, you know, Austin elevates himself to like, this guy is like a borderline kind of star player now. And that feels like both of those scenarios sort of feel unlikely. So that's why I'm saying 45 to 50, but you know, even if we do nothing, 45 to 50. So I think, you know, we could easily, we will barring injury, we should be treading water still by the end of the year.
So I think, and maybe this is me being super homery, but I'm a little bit more optimistic than treading water. And I'll give you some of my reasons and then maybe you can respond after that. But I think if the Lakers are just focused on the first half of the season, the first half of most NBA seasons are when the wackiest record slash standing stuff that isn't necessarily real happens. And with the insertion of the IST, that makes things even weirder. And you end up getting things like the Utah Jazz being one of the top four teams in the West after the first month, right? Or the New Orleans Pelicans being the number one seed in the West in December. And then eventually they both fall off through the course of a season due to a variety of different reasons. So I think the volatility of the first half of any NBA season is something the Lakers can really take advantage of because they are coming in with literally no changes, which means they have continuity. And even if they're not necessarily like a top two or top four caliber team in the league, if you also account for their ceiling in the playoffs, I think they could be a top two or four team in the West by the end of December, because I think this team is going to be pretty good right out of the gate if everyone's healthy, namely because they've been together for the last 2.5 years. Multiple guys on this team, from Rui to Reeves to AD to most recently Max Christie on Jovan Buha's podcast, they have all preached continuity and getting more time with one another. And whether we've fallen ass backwards into continuity or not because Rob can't make a deal, at some point I feel like we're going to really reap the benefits of having the same core. And given the fact that JJ Redick is a new head coach, that kind of helps. Obviously, the Lakers are going to have to adjust to whatever JJ Redick's philosophy as a coach is, but it actually helps JJ Redick to have a team that knows each other so well on and off the court. And so I think that will allow this team to hit the ground running. And on top of it, I mentioned that last season we closed the year 22-10 after Rui Hachimura got inserted into the starting lineup. Well, if you look back even to 2023, after we pulled off that Russell Westbrook trade and got in D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, etc., etc., the Lakers closed that year off 18-8 as well, and we eventually went to the Western Conference Finals, obviously. To start off the 2023-24 year, we all know what happened. Darvin never even started the core group together till the new year, right? Like, Torian Prince was starting, and then we had all that weird stuff happening with Austin Reaves, D'Angelo Russell, and Rui Hachimura each coming off the bench. And I think for two games or so, they were all coming off the bench. So really, if you look at how we ended last season, Tommy, and how we ended the first season with this new group of guys, you have 18-8, 22-10. You put that together, and that's a 40-18 record for that group whenever the core guys were played and whenever you had at least one of Jared Vanderbilt or Rui Hachimura starting. And so 40-18, a 40-18 record for that group in 58 games, that's a 69% win percentage. That is a 57-win team. Now, again, I'm not saying this is a 57-win team through the course of an 82-game regular season, but could they be that type of pace team for the first half of the year? I say yes, because they've shown it in different parts of the season. Usually it's to close a year out, but that also coincides with the fact that when the coach does the right thing and plays his best player, we are a really good regular season team. And on top of that, I think out of all of the other Western Conference teams, because the Lakers didn't do anything, all these other teams have more stuff to figure out. Now, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks, they all retooled in big ways, but Denver demonstrably got worse. The Clippers are definitely worse. The Golden State Warriors were not able to pull off a Lauri Markkanen trade, so they lost Klay Thompson and are integrating multiple new pieces, so they're going to take some time to ramp up. The Memphis Grizzlies, even though they have continuity, they're a year off from, you know, playing competitive basketball, so they're going to need some time to relearn things as well and also integrate their newest rookie, Zach Edey. And then if you look at the other bottom feeder teams that the Lakers are going to have to, like, battle against, the New Orleans Pelicans got DeJounte Murray. That's going to take some adjustment time, and they lost Jonas Valanciunas in the process. Even the Dallas Mavericks, who I mentioned as a team that really upgraded their roster, they're bringing in a big piece like Klay Thompson, who isn't used to playing with such ball-dominant players like Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. He's used to the ball moving around amongst so many different players. And then on top of it, Dallas also lost their two best defenders in Derrick Jones Jr. and Josh Green. Now, they got Najee Marshall, but most of these Western teams are going to take a little bit of time to really figure out who they are. And for the Lakers, for better or for worse, kind of know who they are. They're just trying to see how J.J. Redick is going to potentially elevate them. So anything to add on what I mentioned in terms of the volatility of the first half of normal NBA seasons and how the Lakers can take advantage of that with their continuity? And then to top it all off, Tommy, the Lakers are going to try to defend their IST championship. And so I think that should give them added motivation to not only tread water, but maybe be a top four seed by the time the trade deadline hits. And then we can really upgrade the roster in meaningful ways versus kind of just right now, if we made a trade, we're like, we're not sure what works, we're not sure what doesn't. But by December, we may have a clearer idea of just how good this team is and how much higher we can raise its ceiling.
So the main thing I push back on in your analysis is we're coming into this with a new coach. Players, like, yes, 1 through 15, we are technically bringing back everyone we brought back, or everyone we had last year, right? Other than the rookies. And then, like, the swaps of a couple vets that you mentioned for those rookies. But the fact that we're bringing back 13 of the same guys, and the Dallas Mavericks, who just made the Western Conference Finals, are bringing back, like, 10 of the same guys, I feel like these are, like, kind of minor discrepancies. Like, the stars are the same, the systems are the same, the coaches are the same. And this has been a problem with our franchise for a while. The fact that we bring back same players, you know, to the extent we've done it, which we know there's been a lot of roster turnover in the AD LeBron era, but it doesn't ever really seem to help us that much when we do it. And I feel like there's always some confounding factor that we point to, like injuries or, you know, some other thing that's the reason why it hasn't worked out. But the fact that we don't have any organizational, like, infrastructure continuity, I think is, like, a huge, huge issue for us. And coaching is a part of that. So, you know, all these guys technically know how to play together. They don't know how to play together under JJ Redick. They don't know how to play together, you know, in that system. And they don't know like what he's going to be sort of requiring from each of them. And they're all going to have to learn their new roles. Like, to me, that's like, to me, that's a bigger step as like a collective, you know, group to make that than like for Klay Thompson to figure out like, you know, what he's going to do for like 10 seconds while Luka holds the ball, you know, on each possession. And so, yeah, so that's, I think that's a factor. And at the end of the day, also talent wins. And I don't know that we have enough continuity to overcome the talent deficit between our roster and some of the top seeds in the West.
I think that's fair. My pushback to that, though, my pushback to your pushback is that this group has tended to succeed off of intuition. If you look at when they were put together to close the 2023 season, Darvin Ham didn't know what he was doing. It was almost better that Darvin Ham did not have a real system in place for them because they were literally just playing off of improvisation, you know? And the second half of last season, they were pushing back against their own coach's stupidity to start the year. And so for JJ Redick, to me, I understand they're going to have to adjust to what he wants to do, but I imagine the first half of the season, JJ Redick's going to keep things simple and he's going to rely on these guys to help lead him because they have played with each other for the last 2.5 years and they know just like on basic concept, basic talent alone, they know how to play off of each other. That's how we got to the Western Conference Finals. Yes, Darvin Ham helped eventually, but I've seen enough of what Darvin Ham has done and not done with this group to know that the continuity has actually worked out, Tommy. As I mentioned, 18-8 to close 2023, and then 22-10 to close 2024. Whenever Darvin Ham started one of Jared Vanderbilt and Rui Hachimura, isn't that an example of continuity working?
It is, and I know you said you did put caveats on this, but the one thing I'd push back on is, again, there is like, it's different when your back is against the wall. Like, this group has not shown that over 82 games, which we've had this group for a year and a half, right? So this group has not shown that, like, for 82 games, they could play every single game with the intensity that they're about to miss the playoffs. And both
IST
of those...
championship?
IST championship, but because there was something at stake, right? So it's like,
but
we
there's
started
going to be something at stake again
for the IST championship.
but we were 14-9 heading into the IST championship in December. That's kind of my point. We're going to head into that once again, and the motivation here is let's defend our IST championship. So again, I'm not saying this is a top four caliber team. I'm saying there are reasons why they could easily be that by mid-December.
Yeah, no. I mean, they might be, right? And but they might be as a consequence of the parity in the West, I think. You know, I don't know.
Yes.
I just don't think there's as much continuity when it organizationally, you know, we are turning over like player development. We're turning over all of the coaches. We're probably turning. I assume the coaches have a hand in like, you know, I don't know if they have a hand in who the trainers are and stuff like, but like all that stuff is going to be turned over. We are going to be introducing multiple new players to the core rotation who basically did not play last year, right? And I know these are just guys like Vando and Gabe Vincent who are not like primary, they're not starters necessarily. I don't know if Vando's going to start, but they're not starters and they're not our top six, but they're going to be primary rotation players, and it's basically like they have not played with this team effectively.
Vando
right?
has.
Vando sort of has, right? But Vando hasn't in the context of what we're trying to do with Redick, right? And the space, Vando has not played in the five out offense. I guess that's like a better way of putting it. Vando played in whatever we were running that prior season, and that worked, and the five out offense worked. But Vando is a new player in the five out offense. Gabe is going to be a new player in the five out offense. And that's what these guys all did last year, you know, in their second half push to make us the best offensive team in the NBA. So I like, those are all going to be things that adjust. Like when you're playing Vando over somebody like Taurean Prince, that's like, you're swapping defense, you know, offense for defense. And so it's like, how do those lineups change? You know? So it's not that we don't have continuity. We are probably in the top five in the West in terms of overall continuity. But I just think that the amount of continuity that we have is not going to be enough to overcome the lack of talent that we have comparatively to the other top teams. Now, when we started this, you know, you said treading water, and I thought you were framing it as, are we going to be good enough to at least tread water? I think we'll be good enough to at least tread water, certainly. Yeah. But I just don't think that, I don't know that, like, where that, what that means in terms of seeding. Like, are we going to be playing as well as the top four teams in the West in December? I don't know. But we should have enough to, like, tread water, certainly.
Yeah, I think all your points are fair, and the discussion on the organizational, you know, ineptitude is a podcast episode for another day, because everything you brought up is 100% true. I think they're trying to rectify that, obviously. They've made a bunch of hirings that I think they're trying to ride with for the long term. That's why they hired J.J. Redick. But I think, I mean, your point about, you know, how much is, you know, this quote-unquote continuity that the Lakers have, how much is that actually going to push them? I guess I would say maybe it's good with all the changes that are happening that they do have continuity with the roster then. You know what I'm saying? Like, if there are all these changes, as you're pointing out, and if J.J. Redick does have to, you know, acclimate himself and institutionalize so many different things, my argument, I guess, from the beginning, subconsciously, maybe not subconsciously, I implied it, but my argument has been, well, that's good then that we have the same group of guys to sort of help give J.J. Redick some rampway where, if this was an entirely new group of guys, then, you know, I don't know how long it's going to take for us to actually hit the ground running. So why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's just close this episode out and talk about who we would trade the 2029 first round pick for.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back. Tommy, that was actually a really good debate because we are not typically on opposite ends of the spectrum. I don't know if we did that debate justice. It wasn't really a debate, but I understand all of your points. I think we're both in the same sort of sentiment of the Lakers could easily be a top four team in the West by the end of December. I think we're just on opposite ends of the spectrum of, like, the glass half full perspective of things. I think you're a little bit glass half empty if the Lakers don't do anything, but I think we're aligned in the sentiment as well that the Lakers have to do something at some point. And for me, that's probably going to happen near the trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of the trade deadline, the last episode we talked about, you know, resetting what the value of the 2029 first and 2030 first round picks are for the Lakers, because they are literally the most valuable first the Lakers have ever had in the Anthony Davis and LeBron James era, because these picks represent the seasons in which both LeBron James and Anthony Davis may no longer be present. So let's talk about what trade proposals we deem worthy enough of giving up one of these premier picks plus the necessary rotation salary ballast on top of that. I asked you to come up with a package of your own, and then I have some to throw your way as well. But why don't you kick things off?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a specific package more than I do a framework. Okay. And so maybe I'll just start there, and then we can see if, I guess it'll answer the question. We can see if any of yours fit my framework. But, you know, if we're doing a trade involving these picks, 2029 or 2031, I think we need to, we're not going to accomplish every goal we have. And so for purposes of being realistic, I think we need to focus on two goals. I think the first one is we achieving one of these two goals. I think we either need to acquire a young player with upside who we think, you know, in 5 years is going to be in their mid-20s and just a couple years older than the people getting drafted that year, potentially, who we think that we can, you know, develop into more than what they have shown in their first couple years. You know, I'm thinking like a 21-year-old who was drafted at 19, who hasn't, you know, first two seasons, you know, kind of imagining like Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, these like underwhelming top picks from first couple years who ended up panning out after a few years and a change of scenery. So I'd say either one of those guys, because then it's like we're not really wasting the pick that much in the sense that we still ended up getting a young guy out of it. Mm-hmm. Second would be some sort of trade that like makes us clearly elevates us and clearly closes that talent gap that, you know, we talked about in the other segment. You know, but the question then becomes, it's like, obviously it's a spectrum and it's hard to say like which player definitively does that, right? Like certainly you would say that like Lauri Markkanen would have been someone who might have done that, but you know, that's where I sort of decided on a framework versus like individual trades, because then it's like, sure, it becomes so hard to tell.
And I think they're only going to trade one of these first, to be honest with you. I don't think they're going to trade both. So if we're looking at things under the prism of the Lakers are going to trade the 2029 first at some point this year, what does the framework look like? I think I landed in a similar place as you, because I think if we trade the 2029 first at the trade deadline, whatever trade package we come up with, I think it needs to look somewhat like an upgraded version of what we did in 2023 with the Russell Westbrook deal, where the Lakers offloaded Russell Westbrook's contract and gave up the 2027 first, top four protected. Now, I emphasize upgraded version because obviously this 2029 first is a lot more valuable, and we are going to be sending out actual valuable rotation pieces and less harmful salary ballast than Russell Westbrook's $47 million, right? So for me, I'm looking at a framework that kind of, you said that it only needs to fulfill like one of two objectives. Is that what you said?
Yeah, those are the two things I laid out would be my two goals. And I think as long as one of those are achieved, I'm open to trading the pick.
Okay, so for me, I think it needs to, whatever trade we do, I think it needs to kill two or three birds with one stone and address several weaknesses, kind of like what the 2023 trade did, where we got a point guard in D'Angelo Russell, who was a better fit. We got a movement shooter in Malik Beasley, even though he didn't pan out. And then we got a young defensive wing in Jared Vanderbilt, right? It fulfilled three different positions. So under that sort of framework, let me know what you think about these trades. And I think some of these trades actually fulfill your framework as well. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Lakers trade with the Washington Wizards, who they've traded with multiple times in the past, and they are going to trade D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, Christian Wood, JHS, the 2029 first. So that's the trade package. That's $42 million going out, okay?
Jordan Poole.
No. So D'Angelo, Rui, Wood, JHS, 2029 first. I don't know if there's a protection or not. Let's assume it's like top two protected, whatever. And we are getting back Jonas Valanciunas, who's making $9.9 million, Kyle Kuzma, who's making $23.5 million, and Corey Kispert, who's on a $5.7 million expiring contract, but will be a restricted free agent next season. That is $41 million incoming. Now, you can also try and make a Malcolm Brogdon deal work here because he's an expiring $22 million, but I kind of just wanted Kispert instead of a guy like that, and adding Malcolm Brogdon's deal to the overall framework of this trade makes it more complicated. So I wanted Jonas Valanciunas, who only makes $9.9 million, and Kispert, who only makes $5.7 million in this deal. So what are your thoughts about Jonas, Kuzma, and Kispert? It kind of fulfills what you said and fulfills what I said as well, because that's three different positions.
Yeah, so for something like this, I would say, you know, I put this in the, this clearly elevates us to a contender-like status. I think, like, you know, Valanciunas obviously plugs a big hole that we've had for years with respect to our lack of a big bruising center. Not only does he do that, and not only can he soak up 25 minutes a night over 82 games, if we're paying him sub $10 million, it does not sting nearly as much when the playoffs roll around and we need to pull him, or like he drops to 10 minutes, or he becomes purely matchup dependent. We only play him against Jokic, or whatever we decide to do. it does not hurt you that much, because for 82 games, you've got a bruiser who could soak up minutes, who could space the floor, and, you know, offensively is a huge upgrade. In my opinion, for the way that we want to play over what Wood is able to do consistently, Kyle Kuzma is a huge upgrade defensively for us, and wing defense is a glaring need. And then, you know, you don't lose, although you're going to lose a significant amount of shooting with D'Lo, you get some of that back with Kispert. I mean, you get it with Kuzma as well, but you get it's a good chunk of it back with Kispert too. So I really like this trade, and this is something that I would be willing to do. It feels crazy because there's so many players involved, but this actually feels, and again, maybe we're both homers, this feels to me like a real trade that could happen, like notwithstanding the number of players, like it is like, and the number of dollars on each side, that it actually feels like this is pretty fair. The Wizards get out of a contract, they get Rui for a season and a half, and you know, they get some
assets. They get JHS.
You get that? I couldn't think of a good nickname for JHS, so I'm not gonna say it.
There's also like a version of this where you swap D'Lo out and do Gabe Vincent and still get Jonas and Kuzma and remove Kispert, but I guess the Lakers have to juggle that, right? So if by mid-season Austin Reeves is the point guard we thought he could be, then you just trade D'Lo, right? And you get these three guys. If he's not, maybe you keep D'Lo and just add Jonas and Kuzma, and that's still an upgrade in my opinion. So my next one, what do you think about the Lakers trading with Portland, but not for Jeremy Grant, Tommy? So D'Lo, Rui, Gabe, Wood, and the 2029 first, that's $49.6 million outgoing, for Anfernee Simons, who makes $25.8 million, Robert Williams, who makes $12.4 million, and Matisse Thybulle, who makes $11 million. That's $49.2 million incoming. So the Lakers are obviously saving a little bit of money. So D'Lo, Rui, Gabe, Wood, 2029 first for Anfernee Simons, Robert Williams, and Matisse Thybulle. Now, the problem with this deal is you're relying on a bunch of unproven young guys, but they're young guys.
Yeah, I'd say my bigger concern is like, if we knew for sure that Williams and Thybulle were going to be healthy, that's fine. It's like, you know, Thybulle and Williams are in theory really intriguing and also kind of plug needs. I mean, it's like wing defense and backup big, right? It's like those are two huge, huge needs for us. I think Simons I've seen enough from him to like, I mean, to me, this guy on a team that's actually winning games, you know, he's not a star, because if he was like he is a star in my opinion. He's not like a superstar because he doesn't have the gravity to just like put the entire team on his back and take this Portland team from like the 15th seed to the 10th seed by himself. You know, he's not that level, but if this guy was on any pseudo competitive team in the NBA, in my opinion, he'd be like basically considered to be like a borderline all-star, because what he's doing on Portland, I think he can do on any team. I feel like he's developed as a playmaker in the last couple of years quite a bit. And he has a lot of experience actually under his belt for how young he is still. He's like 24, but I think he's already played five seasons. So Simons is a guy that I'm probably higher on than most. And for that reason, I raised an eyebrow to this trade, but the Robert Williams and Matisse Thybulle, it scares me a little bit to include a pick. Because we don't know. I mean, Robert Williams could just miss 60 games again this year. It feels like every year that you know, we're having those conversations.
Yeah, I think Matisse Thybulle is actually pretty healthy. He's played like 65 plus games every season. It's more Robert Williams who is the health risk. But I do understand that this one is a little bit more like, if you're feeling frisky and want to sort of tempt fate a little bit, you could have a higher ceiling because all of these guys are younger. And I do really like Anfernee Simons' game, because while you lose some playmaking from him with regards to swapping D'Lo out for him, he's a much more like flexible and athletic finisher at the rim. He goes to the cup a little bit more than D'Lo does, while still maintaining that high volume 3-point shooting. I mean, he hit like 3.4 threes last season on 38% from 3-point land. So I think I still would prefer the Washington Wizards deal over this one, right? But this one is intriguing.
Yeah.
Okay, so my last one, let me know what you think about this one, because it involves someone who was in the Team USA Team Serbia game, okay? Okay, so for this trade, the Lakers are going to be trading with the Atlanta Hawks, but not for Trae Young, Tommy. So the Lakers are going to trade D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, Christian Wood, JHS, and the 2029 first. That is $53.4 million outgoing. And they're going to get back Bogdan Bogdanovic, who played on Team Serbia and killed Team USA today, $17.2 million, EuroConnect. They're going to get DeAndre Hunter, who is making $21.6 million this year, and then his deal goes on till 26-27. And then lastly, they're going to get Onyeka Okongwu, who's making $14 million this year, and his deal goes until 27-28, when I think he's going to be making, I think by that point, $18 million or so. So that is $15.8 million coming in. The Lakers save like $600K or whatever. So what do you think about the D'Lo, Rui, Gabe, Wood, JHS 2029 first package for Bogdan Bogdanovic, Okongwu, and DeAndre Hunter?
So I would definitely do this one. I don't know that Atlanta would do this.
What if they swapped Okongwu for Larry Nance? But then that doesn't feel like it's enough for us. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the thing about Okongwu is he's just like not... I know he's like been in the league for 4 years or so, but he was a top 10 pick. I it's like hard for teams, I feel like, to... And I feel like, by the way, the same thing with Hunter. Like, it feels like Hunter is not going to reach his maximum potential as a player with the Hawks. He's sort of capped out the last couple of years at like who he seems like he's going to be. He was still a top five pick, 5 years ago. So you're trading one top five pick, another top 10 pick. Bogdanovic is that's just sort of a wash. They probably, get rid of him anyway. It feels like a lot to give up on their end. But, to your point, or to the point I was raising about young guys, right? Like Okongwu is going to be still in his mid-20s by the time LeBron retires. Hunter will probably be late 20s. We're getting some young pieces who can really play. And I think Hunter is like a good example of the type of guy I was sort of referencing earlier where, and I actually, wasn't Hunter originally technically the pick at number four that we, and then through a series of moves. Yeah. But anyway, Hunter, he is a good example to me of a guy who I think has some sort of like a little bit of upside left that can be tapped into. He's not high usage. He's going to average the number of shots. His efficiency and the number of shots he's going to take are probably not going to change that much. But, when he's in a situation where it's like DeAndre Hunter is just like a solid starter and not DeAndre Hunter was our top five pick 3 years ago, I can see him sort of taking a leap, kind of pushing himself. And we get a better defensively, I think, with that trade. So I don't know. I would definitely do that trade. I don't think Atlanta would do that.
I think Atlanta would do the swapping Okongwu out for Larry Nance trade, but
they might do that, yeah.
But maybe that still upgrades us as well. Bogdanovic, Larry Nance, and DeAndre Hunter. I think you could make the argument that we're a better team with that group. The guy who excites me here is obviously Euro Dalton Connect and Bogdan Bogdanovic. But I think Atlanta does this if their season has completely fallen apart. They have that Zachary Risacher guy and they finally commit to a full scale rebuild, and they're like, let's just get off of contracts. Let's get the Lakers 2029 first. Let's find a deal for Trae Young and build around Jalen Johnson and Risacher. So I think that's where they might consider doing it. Tommy, bonus round. Would you do a Utah trade for Walker Kessler? Let's say it's JHS, D'Lo, Cam Reddish, and the 2029 first for Walker Kessler's $2.9 million contract and Colin Sexton's $18.3 million contract. There is a scenario of this trade, Tommy, where we just trade for Walker Kessler, because personally for me, I'd rather just have D'Lo. I'm not a huge Colin Sexton fan, especially in JJ Redick's system, because he's not exactly like a off-ball movement shooter, three-point volume shooter. But if the Lakers are worried about D'Lo's expiring contract and just getting something in return, Sexton is under contract for one more year next year at $19 million. So I could see them just saying, like, let's get something for D'Lo. So D'Lo, JHS, Cam, and the 2029 first for Walker Kessler and Colin Sexton. Would you do a deal like that?
Yeah, I would do something like that. The thing about Colin Sexton,
about Walker Kessler. I just, maybe you have an answer for me. I feel like I'm missing something with this guy because I still don't understand why Utah is trying to get rid of him. I mean, he's like established himself as like a, and maybe just this nature of the system they're trying to play over there. But to me, in his first couple years in the NBA, he's established himself as like essentially what they're hoping, what Portland is hoping Donovan Clingan will like develop into, yep. Right? Like, Clingan is obviously, I think, has more size and is maybe a little more athletic than Kessler, but Clingan is, you know, as offensively inept at this stage in his career, you know, maybe even more so than Kessler was when he came in. But, you know, Kessler has like amazing size, amazing length, moves his feet well. He can move a little bit on the perimeter, but he can really defend the rim. He's very strong and he's like 22 years old. So I feel like I'm missing something on the Walker Kessler stuff, but I would mostly do the trade for him. To me, Colin Sexton, I generally agree with your, I think I'm higher on Colin than you are, but I think I generally agree with your point that D'Lo is probably a better fit for this team. But, you know, sometimes it's like you get these guys like Sexton and for whatever reason, because he has a reputation, he's the young bull, he plays aggressively. And, you know, sometimes those guys get away with a little more defensively. So, you know, I'm sure it'll help us defensively a little bit, but overall, you know, I'm sort of neutral on that aspect of the trade.
Will it though? D'Angelo Russell dropped 39 points on his ass, and then the next game dropped 17 assists, like I think a career high 17 assists on the Jazz as well. Anyways, your point is a fair point. Yeah. So in conclusion, these are the deals that I think would help upgrade the Lakers and would make sense for the Lakers to give up a premier 2029 first, whether it's lightly protected or unprotected at all. Do you have a preference, Tommy, for out of all the deals that I mentioned today, for one that you would do, whether it's the Utah deal, the Wizards deal, the Portland deal, or the Atlanta deal?
I think the Wizards deal gets us closest to winning something this season.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's like a good blend of like you have some veterans in Jonas and Kuzma, but you also get to have control over Corey Kispert. Although, I don't know, maybe it's too redundant to have Kispert and Dalton connect, but either way, it's talent and good shooting talent for sort of JJ Redick to hone. But anyways, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. As usual, follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app and Spotify as well. Tommy, I will catch you later. Go check out the fourth quarter highlights of Team USA versus Team Serbia, the portions of the fourth that you missed. You're going to have a ball. See you later.
Peace.
Laters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.